Good afternoon, everyone. I call this meeting of the Committee on Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy to order. Members and testifiers and guests, please mute your mics. This remote hearing is conducted pursuant to Rule 10.01. This remote hearing can be viewed at House Television webcast. The Committee Legislative Assistant will now take the role. Mr. Badri.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Chair Noor present. Vice Chair Zhang.
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang present. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Lead Hamilton present. Baker. Baker. Daphne.
Whoop. Daphne present.
Daphne present. Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Greenman.
Present.
Greenman present. Haley. Haley. Katiza Watun.
Katiza Watun present.
Katiza Watun present. Olson.
Present.
Olson present. Zhang.
Zhang present.
Zhang present. Baker. Baker. Haley. Haley. Juergens.
Juergens present.
Juergens present. Cagle.
Cagle present.
Cagle present. Chair Noor, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Bednar. Members, there's a quorum present. With that, Representative Olson, do you want to move the motion to approve the minutes for February 28th?
Don't move, Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson moves the approval of minutes for February 28th. 2022. Any discussions, ma'am? Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails and minutes for February 28, 2022 are approved. Members, we have several bills today to discuss. Some of them are only informational hearing. The first bill is House File 3020, and that is Representative Baldwin. Welcome to the committee. And I'm assuming this bill is going to be laid over for possible inclusion. And so I move the House File 3020 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Please go and present the bill, House File 3020.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, committee members. I am grateful for the opportunity to present House File 3020 to you today. As you well know, we are experiencing a workforce shortage across the healthcare sector. A fully prepared healthcare workforce is essential and essential to continuing Rochester's status as the Center for Medical Innovation and Excellence. This request is for $11.1 million for a state-of-the-art simulation center, which will allow the opportunity to upskill current healthcare workers and serve as a recruitment and hands-on education experience for Rochester area learners in healthcare fields. Access to simulation technology for underserved healthcare workers and students was the impetus for forming a public-private partnership and simulation collaborative. Membership of this collaborative includes Winona State University, Rochester Community and Technical College, St. Mary's University, University of Minnesota Rochester, Luther College, Health Force Minnesota Center of Excellence, Mayo Clinic, Olmsted Medical Center, Hawthorne Education Center, Southeast Service Co-op, Destination Medical Center, Greater Rochester Advocates for Universities and Colleges, or GROUC, and HGA Architects. Having a state-of-the-art simulation center available to staff and learners from all of these entities would allow for meaningful, creative, and innovative ways of training and development of our valuable healthcare workforce today and into the future. So with that, we do have two testifiers here to speak on this as well, and we'll be happy to answer questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Baldwin, for presenting this bill. I have Julie. I have two Julies, Julie Nygon, to present, testify on this bill. We have 2 to 3 minutes to speak on this, so please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Julie Niggin, and I'm the executive director of GRAUC. GRAUC is a nonprofit that links Rochester area education providers with employers to support the workforce needs of our region, and certainly a prepared healthcare workforce with the opportunity to upskill is vital not only to Rochester, but to the entire state. GRAUC was asked to spearhead a multi-institution, multi-employer effort to increase access to healthcare simulation activities. The GRAUC Simulation Collaborative was formed linking public and private education providers, healthcare employers, and experts in simulation design and technology. No single entity dominates this project. Our goal is to enhance and expand the Rochester area healthcare workforce by providing access to relevant, effective, and flexible simulation resources for workers and students. In Rochester, competitors have become collaborators. After conducting a needs assessment, collaborative members formed a subcommittee, including governance, with subcommittees including governance, technology and design, curriculum, and diversity, equity, and inclusion. Donations were secured to employ consultants from Mayo Clinic's College of Medicine and Science to assemble and enhance the work of the subcommittees. To guarantee that diversity, equity, and inclusion is a priority, a co-design project will document the viewpoints of healthcare students and workers from diverse and underserved communities to ensure that the center is accessible, relevant, and effective for all. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Niggin, for your presentation. The next person on the list is Ms. Julie Anderson. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. I'm Julie Anderson. I serve as the Dean of the College of Nursing and Health Sciences for Winona State University with extensive health force programming on the Winona and Rochester campuses. And it's a privilege to be here with you today. In light of time, I will try to make my remarks very short. It is known that simulation enhances and expands a community's ability to have sufficient numbers of and an effectively prepared healthcare workforce. You are aware of the deed information about Minnesota's healthcare workforce between 2020 and 2030. There'll be a shortage of approximately 85,000 workers in various professions, of which nursing is the predominant shortage. 25,000 are needed before 2030. Most of the healthcare labor force in Minnesota, the needs, will be as a result of exits from the workforce. For example, nurses aged 65 or older account for nearly 20% of each of the RN workforces and the LPN workforces. In addition, the changing demographics of the state signal a need for more nurses and other healthcare workers to care for our aging population and increasing numbers of individuals with multiple chronic conditions. GRAUC has been involved in a deep and thoughtful engagement with a wide variety of rural and urban healthcare agencies, which you've heard about. Simulation emerged as a top pedagogy that would help the health fields to expand enrollment and to effectively educate nurses and other healthcare professionals. Clinical practicum sites for health professions are less plentiful in number, and many accept less students prior to the pandemic. This hinders enrollment and education in all health professions. Simulation would not completely replace in-person clinical education in Minnesota, but it is an effective and validated supplement. It's recognized for pre-licensure to be able to replace up to 50% of the clinical experience in person. So it's not solely about tactile clinical skills, but it's proven to be effective for students to gain skills in professionalism, safety, delegation, care prioritization, clinical judgment, and a host of pharmacological and physiological goals. The proposed center would be a hub for existing health professionals, those that are already in practice, to validate their skills. Some need to be validated yearly. Some new skills are needed because they're changing technology or a healthcare professional is moving to a new position. Interprofessional simulation is very much needed for accreditation of both hospitals and programs in healthcare. And the Simulation Center would allow students to have interprofessional competencies to prepare them for collaborative practice in a range of care provision settings. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Anderson, for your testimony on this bill. Do we have any other person who signed up to testify? Members, any discussion? Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bolden, for the bill. I'm wondering, all the organizations and the colleges that you spoke of, are they having any buy-in, or is this just a straight cash appropriation from the general fund? And then I'll just ask my second question quick, kind of wraps into that. Are you asking for any bonding dollars also? Is this a possible bonding project, cash bonding project?
Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Frankie, for the question. I will try to answer, and I also welcome comments from either of my testifiers if they have anything to add as far as the funding piece. So we are asking for the $11.1 million upfront for the initial startup and build of the simulation center, and moving forward, then it will be maintained as a collaboration of all of the entities who will be using it. And that to the second part of your question, as far as bonding dollars, we are not at this time asking for bonding dollars, but are focused on the workforce piece of it.
Also, this is
Ms. Knight.
Yes, we currently have already received buy-in from a number of our partners: Olmsted Medical Center, Mayo Clinic, the Minnesota State System, Winona State University Foundation, and Destination Medical Center have already donated funds to make a lot of our work possible, since we've been operating since January 2020 with, frankly, no budget. They have been very heavily involved in funding projects that could not be done by volunteers.
President Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That answered my question.
Thank you so much, President Frankie. So I'm assuming the simulator will be something that will help more people to gain skills in a more quickly, faster way, so we can increase the biggest need that we have right now is in healthcare. So thank you so much, Representative Bolden, for bringing this bill forward. Any closing remarks?
I would just say again, thank you for hearing it today. And just on a personal note, I can speak from being both a learner and both an instructor in using simulation, just how effective it is and how versatile it is. And so really would be an excellent way, just as you said, to grow our much needed workforce. So thank you.
Thank you so much for bringing this bill forward. With that, members, I renew my motion, House File 3020 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So thank you so much to the testifiers. The next bill is House File 3269. This will be informational hearing. We're pending the referral from Judiciary and Civil Law. So Representative Hansen, welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. HF 3269, it seeks to further support Minnesota's commitment to data-informed approaches, which we know is really important in evaluating and improving our public programs. DHS presently collects wage data and details from DEED to evaluate MFIP, and this bill seeks to allow DHS to use this same data to evaluate other public assistance programs too. This data already has very strict privacy requirements, and utilizing this information for MFIP has empowered DHS to better understand the labor market characteristics of the people who are utilizing the programs. It also helps us understand better the program's overall efficacy. Expanding the usage of this data will further promote the utilization of evidence-based methods to evaluate other public programs like SNAP, general assistance, supplemental aid, housing support. A clear understanding of employment patterns with this data will allow the state to identify barriers and opportunities to ultimately employ the necessary tools to continue to move more families with children out of poverty. And with that, Mr. Chair, we have Deborah Schlick with DHS here to answer any technical questions that you or the committee might have. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Hansen, for your presentation on this bill. Any discussion, members? This may come before us as soon as we get the referral, so we wanted to make sure that we have the discussion on this bill. Just wanted to let you know that DHS already has the authority to use the data, but this removes the ambiguity in the system and makes sure that the utilization of this bill, access is something that we are allowing. So hopefully things will be cleared as soon as we get the bill sent to us. Any questions, member? Representative Juggins.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. I'm just curious, and maybe I just missed this. Does DHS share the information from these evaluations with the legislature?
Ms. Schlick.
Chairman Noor and Representative Juergens, we publish some information that we do analysis on, and anytime we're asked by the legislature, we share information. And it's always an aggregate, of course. It's never identified information. Right.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jennings. So, go ahead.
Yeah, just to follow up, Mr. Chair, if I could. So explain again, how would this data be used? Is it used to evaluate programs as well and maybe justify changes or new programs based on that data?
Ms. Schlick.
Chairman Noor and Representative Juergens, and I should have identified myself. I'm Deborah Schlick, and I work at the Department of Human Services. Yes, this data, the law already allows us to use wage detail data to evaluate and analyze the Minnesota Family Investment Program. And with that analysis, we've been able to identify, for instance, what is the labor market history of the adults who apply to that program before application? And what do we know about their employment when they leave? That sort of analysis would then, if this change in law is passed, we would be able to do similar analysis for programs like the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the SNAP Employment and Training Program, which is particularly important because the federal government requires us to report on outcomes after someone's left SNAP Employment and Training, their employment status, and as well as adult cash assistance programs. So we do similar work for other programs with this data.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Schlick. And Representative Hansen, I don't see any other member with questions. So if you have any closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, not just for the work you do on this bill, but for the work you do for Minnesotans everywhere. So thank you for having me today.
Thank you so much. With that, we will wait for the referral of this bill. The next bill that we have today is House File 3848. Representative Agbaje, welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill. Before you do that, this bill will be also be laid over for possible inclusion. Nick, do we have Representative Agbaje?
Mr. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. We're actually hearing a House File 3015 from Representative Greenman, and I will be texting Representative Agbaje. She's in another committee at the moment. So I will text her so we can hear this one first.
Sorry about that. So we'll come back to that one. House File 3015, Representative Greenman, please move your bill and introduce it to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 3015 be re-referred to the House Judiciary and Civil Law Committee.
Please go ahead and present the House File 3015. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is, like the bill that came before us, a simple bill. All it does is add the Attorney General's office to the long list of other state and local government agencies that DEED is permitted to share the data it collects. It limits this data sharing for the specific purpose of enforcing Minnesota's wage theft laws. The bill is a legal fix so that one branch of state government is permitted to share information with another branch for the purpose of enforcing existing Minnesota law. It provides the Attorney General's office with the information they need to identify and investigate employers who deprive their workers of overtime pay or pay workers less than their agreed upon wages. While it's a simple policy change, the ability of the AG's office to get this routine employer data directly from DEED will alleviate the burden on employers to reproduce data, and it will also save the AG's office time and resources. Here's why it's important. To enforce our laws, the Attorney General's office needs this data on the number of employers they employ, the hours they work, and how they're paid. It's a routine investigation tool to enforce our employment laws. This is all information that DEED gathers from employers as part of administering the UI system. But current law prohibits DEED from entering into that data sharing agreement unless we add them to that list of state and local agencies permitted in section 268.9.19. Without this data sharing, the AG can obtain this information. They have to go directly to the employer with a civil investigatory demand to get information that the employer has already reported to DEED. I'll let Assistant Attorney General Mueller explain it a little bit more, but here's two things I'll say as a policymaker. First, this current restriction puts an unnecessary burden on employers who are already providing this information to DEED and now have to respond to another branch of government for the same information. Second, it makes the investigations more expensive because the AG staff has to spend time and resources getting directly from employers what they could already get from another branch of government. It's important that our AG has the information they need to ensure that Minnesota workers receive the wages they've earned. This bill just gives the AG, the AG's office the same access to this data that other departments that are enforcing employment laws have. Department of Labor, Department of Human Rights, local human rights agencies, and the Commerce Fraud Bureau. Not to mention, if you look at the bill or at the statute, Department of Revenue, Department of Human Services, Department of Health, Department of Corrections, or the state auditor, as long as in addition to higher ed, specific law enforcement agencies, ICE, all have access to this data. By giving the AG this access, it reduces the burden on employers, reduces the time and resources for the AG's office, and ensures that the state does its job to ensure workers receive their wages. With that, I will, I think we have one testifier from the Attorney General's office. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Mueller, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony. Assistant Attorney General.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me. My name is Jonathan Mueller, and I'm an Assistant Attorney General in the Minnesota Attorney General's Office. I've been with the office for 8 years, and my work consists of investigating potential violations of Minnesota statutes chapters 177 and 181, which are Minnesota's employment protections. And I litigate cases when the office discovers violations. I've been doing this work since 2019, when the legislature recognized the Attorney General's authority to enforce these chapters of Minnesota law. Prior to that, I spent 5 years representing the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry, the Minnesota Department of Human Rights, the Minnesota Department of Health, and the Minnesota Department of Corrections. Prior to that, I worked in private practice. I'm going to testify in support of adding the Minnesota Attorney General's Office to the list of government entities that can receive unemployment insurance data through Minnesota Statute Section 268.19. The office seeks to be added for the limited purpose of supporting its authority to investigate violations of Minnesota's employment protections. Adding the office to this list would be prudent because it would put the office on equal footing as other government entities that enforce Minnesota's employment laws. The limited data that the office would receive is meant to streamline and further the office's active investigations into alleged violations of Minnesota's employment protection laws. Access to this data will increase the efficiency of investigations and allow the office to vet investigations before burdening employers with requests for information from this office. Numerous government entities have already have access to this unemployment insurance data. That includes, as Representative Greenman said, the Department of Labor and Industry, the Department of Human Rights, local human rights agencies, and the Commerce Fraud Bureau. And it also includes state and federal agencies that administer unemployment insurance programs, any agency that assists individuals in finding jobs, any agency in any state that administers child support, along with a raft of others, including the Department of Revenue, the Department of Human Services, the Department of Health, the Department of Corrections, the State Auditor, the Office of Higher Education, Criminal Law Enforcement, and U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. This is routine data that is accessible to a broad array of agencies, both inside and outside of Minnesota, for the purposes of investigating and administering the law. Reviewing unemployment insurance data is a tried and true investigatory tool used by law enforcement agencies of all types. Agencies like the Department of Labor and Industry routinely pull this data when vetting a potential investigation. It's also a useful data to have to make sure information employers provide is consistent with what is provided to DEED. It saves resources by allowing investigatory bodies like the Attorney General's office to gather information in a non-adversarial way. This information can help the office determine whether an investigation has merit and should proceed to a civil investigative demand, or whether the investigation lacks merit and should be closed before burdening an employer with an information request, requiring them to hire an attorney and dedicate resources to gather information that the office could have gotten on its own through DEED at no cost to employers. It's a common sense bill that will make my job more efficient and less intrusive to employers. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Assistant Attorney General Moore. So members, any discussions? Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Greenman for this interesting bill. I, you know, most people here know I'm an employer, and I also, I get the gist of this, and I'm trying to get my head around providing more information about things that we already give to the state of Minnesota. Again, our quarterly reports, our earnings and things like that are something that as employers we do already. When we're giving it over now, or when it's accessible now to an elected official's office, this is a little different than Department of Labor and DEED. Those are different to me. And so Representative Greenman, I guess my point is I am very concerned. I am very concerned about the potential phishing that the AG's office could do when an employer now really doesn't know what's happening kind of behind the scene. Is there anything in this bill that will prevent an employer to be nervous about that? I want to get the bad employers out there that are taking advantage of people. This is not trying to protect bad players. What I want to make sure is that we are protecting the people doing what they're supposed to be doing. When an honest mistake is made, we don't make it a bigger deal when we want to clean it up and get it done. And I may have a follow-up or two as well. But, Mr. Chair, that would be my question right now is how do we protect those folks in that way?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Baker. You know, I think our Attorney General's office, like many other law enforcement officers, is run by professionals who've been there before our current Attorney General and will be there after and do their job, and their job is to enforce our current laws. The data that DEED is sharing is actually a relatively limited set of information. And again, like we sort of listed, pretty much most other agencies in our government have access to it in order to do their job. I think I may turn it over to Assistant Attorney General Mueller for a second to just explain that. But what I will say is I actually think that this bill is important to protect employers because, again, this is a relatively high level of data. It's data that other agencies have, and it allows, as the Assistant Attorney General said, them to ensure that folks, so they don't need to go up and follow up with a civil investigatory demand, they don't have to. And so I actually think in this context, we're talking about a simple data sharing that will make our law enforcement more streamlined and protect employers from what could be an investigation that would require more adversarial time just to get the information in order to close it. So let me turn it over to, I don't know if Assistant Attorney General, you have any additional comments.
Before that, I just wanted to make sure that this is clear. This data is available to state, local law enforcement, and federal law enforcement, which is a limited scope based on that information. In fact, this will be number 18 added to the list. We just had about DHS for the purpose of reporting on SNAP and MFIP. So this does not negate that there's some guardrails in the system. I'll let Assistant Attorney General Moore just explain in details a little bit if he has any additional comment.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I would add that the statute already has protections for the use of data. 268.19 subdivision 1C discusses that data gathered by the department can't be the sole basis for a lawsuit or civil proceedings. So the office would always have a grounds to seek the information. Otherwise, we would not be able to use it to sue an employer. And if there were no violations, we would not be using that anyway. I'd also like to talk a little bit about how we can use the data to vet investigations before they have to go as far as serving an information request to an employer. For example, the Attorney General's office now has authority to enforce the Equal Pay Act. And say the office receives a complaint from a person under the Equal Pay Act that they are not receiving the same wages as a man who's doing the same work. If we have this data, we would easily be able to pull the data and compare, and if there's no merit to the complaint, we could just direct them on their own. We have all sorts of resources for attorney referrals and that kind of thing, but we would not expend our resources or the employer's resources in gathering that kind of pay data and giving it to us. So in that way, we can vet investigations before they get off the ground and not use either our resources or the employer's resources. Just as one example.
Representative Beck.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that. I think what I want to make sure, as an employer, again, I'm trying to understand, we already have the rules that we work within the state of Minnesota with DEED and DOLE, Department of Labor, and they both also have authority for penalizing and issuing fines and penalties. Now we've got this third arm that could do the same for maybe different reasons. And I just have to be honest as well here, as much as and this is unusual for a representative to say, I have got a great relationship with the Attorney General's office working through some lawsuit things right now with opioids. And I am not trying to make this political at all, but we just came out of a very bumpy ride in business relations, Representative Greenman, from the COVID and the shutdowns, and the Attorney General got involved. And so right now, the business community is very nervous with this. And I just want to make sure you understand that it is something to really dive into. So to Representative Greenman, have you had a chance to talk to some of the hospitality companies or the business groups about what do they think of this move to allow this addition? And you know, this state is always wonky about expanding any information. So I want to say that out of respect for this, what we're trying to get here done. And again, Mr. Mueller was good about telling us, you know, where they can and can't do it. But sometimes we wonder if that's actually what's really going on behind the scenes as business, because we don't understand it day to day. So if you could answer that, Ms. Representative Greenman, I'd appreciate that.
As Representative Greenman answers the question, I think if you read that section, number 18, the purpose of this is for two purposes, is the wage theft and also misclassification. Nothing more than that, because it's more narrow scope and there's a specific purpose that we are allowing the Attorney General. So I'll let Representative Greenman answer your question on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Baker. To be honest, because what this bill does is just let one section of government talk to the other and share information, a relatively limited scope, while continuing to protect that data privacy. That to me, what I hear you voicing is some enforcement concerns, and I know that has to do with the enforcement and the statute that we passed. But this bill is just ensuring that one branch of government can use information it already collects under the same protections that that we have for any time this information is collected and shared with another branch of government for the enforcement of existing law. I'm happy to reach out for that limited purpose of that conversation. But as I understand it, what this bill does is just add as number 18, the additional agency for a limited purpose under the same data protections as we have and we use in and that works in other sections of our government.
And to Mr. Chair, yeah, just to wrap it up, but I get that. I know it's just one line. It's just one of 18. That's why we go the committee process, everybody. And this is why we have to dive in and we have to make sure, why is it that the AG's office wants this? So again, we are still tender in business. We are still afraid. And we still think sometimes government goes too far. And we just want to make sure we get to ask the questions that we need to understand better so we can share that with our folks at home. So that's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Baker. So the next person in line is Representative Juggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions. I had some questions along the same lines as Representative Baker, but I don't need to rehash those. What is the data? Could my understanding is this is data gathered from any person under the administration of the Minnesota Unemployment Insurance Law. That's not the way the bill is stated. So that's employee information, that's social security numbers, that's wage information. I have a problem with that in saying that this is the 18th agency or entity that has access to the data doesn't make me feel any better. I have a business in my district that is the victim of a fishing expedition by Department of Labor, OSHA, Minnesota OSHA. So the fact that other agencies have access to this data doesn't make me feel any better. Maybe we should be looking at reducing the number of agencies that have access to that private information. So I guess my question would this be used only in an investigation, an active investigation? And if so, why not require some sort of, I guess having some checks and balances isn't a bad thing. Maybe not a subpoena necessarily, but having to go through the request is not a bad thing in my mind. Help me understand why this is necessary, because I heard the testimony, and to me, it doesn't seem, I don't think there's enough safeguards in place. I'll just put it that way.
Representative Greenman or Assistant Attorney General Moore?
Well, let me just start by saying that I think that what we're talking about is law enforcement, the enforcement of our existing laws to ensure that workers are paid the wages that they are owed. And at the end of the day, it's about our equal pay laws. It's about ensuring that folks who earn overtime actually get overtime. That's just to be clear, because we've talked sort of broadly about the Attorney General's office and other things, but what we're talking about is ensuring that Minnesota workers who work get their resources. And this is a tool, it's just information. But I think that what I don't think we want is to have a government that collects information and then makes another branch collect information that is burdensome on the employers, is burdensome and costs additional money and additional resources and time for our public servants, and then also is less efficient at enforcing the law and ensuring that those workers get their due under our current law. So let me turn over to our Assistant Attorney General to sort of handle the technical piece of that. But I do think it's important that we focus on, we're talking about something that will relieve the burden of providing this information again, will make us and our government able to enforce the laws that we did pass.
Assistant Attorney General.
Yes, thank you, Chair. And I would emphasize that we would only be requesting this information for active investigations. Our statute, Section 8.31, requires us to have reasonable grounds before we begin an investigation. So there are safeguards built into not only Section 268, but also into Section 8.31.
President.
Commissioner, Assistant Commissioner, could you give me that statute number again, please?
Assistant Attorney General.
The statute that we're talking about, or our statute, our investigation statute?
Mr. Chair, the statute that regulates the access to the information.
It's 268.19.
Okay. And Mr. Chair?
Representative Jogan.
Assistant Commissioner, is there a tracking method then so that when that data is accessed, do we know who accessed the information, what day, what time, and able to track that back to what active investigation it was in reference to?
I think that would be Assistant Attorney General.
Go ahead. We would have to make the request to DEED for the data, and just with retention policies for documents and investigations, yes, that would be preserved.
So yes, we'd be able to track that back
We have someone from DEED just to confirm, because we always have the metadata collected for any request or anything else. Anyone from DEED? I see Darielle Tannen.
There we go. Hi, Chair. My name is Darielle Tannen, and I'm the Government Relations Director from DEED. So I'm not 100% sure what the question is. Is the question if this passes, would we be able to track the request from the Attorney General's office, or is there another question that was out here?
Mr. Chair, can we...
Go ahead, Representative Jorgensen. I think it's the audit trails about access to the data from DEED, and that's how I think I would put it.
Yes, that's accurate. I want to know if we're able to track back who accessed the data, what day, what time, and reference that to a specific active investigation.
Ms. Tannen.
Yep, thank you, Chair. So that's a great question. The answer to that is going to depend. If this were to pass, I guess that would have to be something that our team would have to look into. I don't think we keep data at such a granular level. We do share data on a regular basis, of course, with some of these other entities that are listed in the statute for specific purposes. So we certainly do track that information. But we don't have the kind of tracking mechanism that you're referencing available at present.
I'll just put on my hat for IT and say that as someone who has worked for the state and the systems that I've worked with DEED, the audit trail system exists for any data request. And so to some extent, I think there's always that who's accessing the data, when and how. Some of that information is kept within the system. We'll follow up with the department to make sure that those audit trails exist. I'm sure that's a question that will be coming up as we go to judiciary. I know some people are very much interested in that audit trail, but it exists. I just wanted to make sure that we get somebody to clarify from DEED.
Okay. That's it, Mr. Chair. Thank you for allowing me to ask the questions.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Friedman, as I listened to you describe your bill this afternoon, you've said a couple times that you're trying to relieve a burden on businesses. I have not heard this from any business owners that I represent or from any of the larger business groups. So I'm just wondering where what you're meaning by that and where the burden is if we haven't heard any of them testify either today.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Haley. I think as the Assistant Attorney General mentioned, this would really only apply once, and the information that they'd be seeking only after they have an investigation. So I imagine that that pool is small. I imagine that you're probably not hearing every day from the businesses where active investigations are being pursued. I think I will maybe turn it over to Assistant Attorney General Mueller to describe how they get this information now, which requires going directly to the employers to ask for a bunch of information that's already pursued in the regular course of business. And that's what I meant about relieving that burden. Let me turn it over to Assistant Attorney General Mueller, who maybe can describe the tools you have to get this information now under the law to enforce it.
Assistant Attorney General.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So what I would say is that generally when we are conducting investigations, we gather as much information as possible before we move forward and send an information request to an employer. And that's because we want to know as much as we can before we send a civil investigative demand. And in the process of receiving employee complaints and vetting them, there are many instances where the type of data that we can get from Deed could establish that there is no violation. Sometimes employees file complaints to the office about wages, and it's simply because they don't necessarily understand how things work, or they might be wrong that there's a violation. For example, if someone claimed that they weren't being paid minimum wage, we would be able to pull the data and based on the hours compared to the wage detail report, it would be very simple for us to deduce whether or not there was a minimum wage violation for a particular employee. The other example I gave was in an equal pay complaint. It would be very easy for us to compare wages for one person to another similar employee from a business. And in getting that information, we would have that, and if we can satisfy ourselves that there's no violation, we would not send an investigative demand to an employer. When we do send an investigative demand to an employer, we ask for information about hours worked and other information that employers are required to keep under Minnesota statute section 177.30. And that can be a burdensome process for employers. So there are instances where we would not send a CID if we had this information that we might otherwise have to when we don't have access to the information. There are also instances where someone might report that, for example, we had a case that settled over the summer against the Bartman restaurants where overtime was being avoided because businesses were paying multiple employees for less than 40 hours. And if we had this data, it would be easier for us to know if that kind of violation is existing if we received an employee complaint like we did in the Bartman case. So those are just some examples of how that information would be useful to us and how it can sometimes result in us not sending a CID that we might otherwise send. Thank you.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess just one follow-up question for the author, Representative Freeman. Do you know how many wage theft cases that the state has had since we passed the law last session?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Haley. I think given that we have the Attorney General's office on. I will defer to them to make sure that I'll get you an accurate number.
Assistant Attorney General Mola, do you have any numbers or?
We have several public settlements. We can't discuss the specifics of active investigations, but we have two cases that have settled recently in the last year.
Representative Haley.
Thank you. I guess I'm just trying to get a scope of the problem that we're trying to fix here, and I'm still not, I guess, convinced that that this bill is necessary. But thank you for the opportunity to ask questions.
Any further discussions, members? I think this is a more of a straightforward request because if you go through, even the Department of Human Rights Enforcement is included in there. So this is a small request that we can move forward and work with the agency to make sure that we can take care of any issues that are coming up. So with that,
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead. I wanted to give you the closing remarks and then renew your motion before we call for a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. And I just wanted to make sure to refocus us on what the bill actually does and what the statute actually does, which is it just adds the ability of a deed under the same privacy protections that apply under a data privacy statute to share that information with the Attorney General for the purposes of enforcing the two sections of our employment law. That is all this bill does. It makes sure that government is more efficient because we are already collecting this information and employers are already giving it in the regular course of business. And it ensures that law enforcement can do their job and enforce the laws that we've passed. So again, adding it as number 18 to the list of agencies that are doing their work under these parameters. So members, I'd ask you for your support. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Greenman. Representative Greenman renews her motion that House File 3015 be re-referred to Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Mr. Badri, Legislative Assistant, will now take the roll.
Chair Noor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Zhang?
Aye.
Baker?
No.
Dabney?
Aye.
Frankie?
No.
Greenman?
Aye.
Haley?
No.
Juergens?
Juergens, no.
Cagle?
Aye.
Patiza Watun?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
And Zhang?
Aye.
Chair Noor, we have 8 ayes and 4 nays.
Thank you so much, Representative Greenman. With 8 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails, and you're now on your way to judiciary and civil law. With that, I think we're going to go back to a bill that I announced before its time. So, Representative Agbaje, welcome to the committee. I move House File 3848 be laid over for possible inclusion. Please proceed, introduce yourself to the committee and proceed with your bill.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. So I am here to present House File 3848. This bill would appropriate $400,000 to HIRED to support their career programs. So HIRED is a workforce development nonprofit that works to connect job seekers to employers all across the Twin Cities. And this funding would help expand their successful career pathways program. HIRED has a long track record of training and preparing more workers to fill job vacancies for employers. And this is a crucial investment both on the worker side and the employer side. HIRED provides an opportunity for people to contribute to our economy and provide them with an opportunity to support their families and communities. And with that, I'm happy to introduce to you Julie Brecky, HIRED's Executive Director. So I'll turn it over to her, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Ms. Julie Brecky, and please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Julie Brecky. I am the executive director at Hired, and I'm really thankful for your time today. As you may know, Hired is a multi-service workforce development nonprofit, and our work centers on one thing, helping people prepare for and secure good jobs. We define a good job as one with family-sustaining wages, medical benefits, job advancement potential, and the opportunity to build career and build wealth. Hired works with people and families across the Twin Cities. We support individuals whose careers opportunity have been shaped by historic and systemic inequity. We build trusting relationships with each person we work with. And last year alone, we served 5,250 people. And despite the pandemic, we helped more than 1,500 people find a job with an average wage of $23 an hour. Hired currently offers career pathway programs in medical call center and office admin. We work with employer partners who struggle to find qualified candidates for entry level and gateway level jobs. And our employer partners are really engaged throughout the class in a variety of roles, including informing the curriculum to guaranteeing job interviews and many points in between. Hired has employer partners like Fairview, Medica, ActiveStyle, Alina, Children's, the State of Minnesota, Ramsey County, and others. In the next 18 months, Hired will train over 100 people for jobs in both healthcare and office admin, with 70 to 90% of our graduates receiving a job offer shortly after graduation, and their starting wage is between $16 and $24 an hour. And we know we can be even bigger part of the worker shortage solution of the Twin Cities, and that's why we're here today. Hired has received DEED competitive grant funds for many years, and we're asking for a direct appropriation because we'll be able to serve more people. And we think that's really important in this moment in time. A $400,000 direct appropriation will help Hired expand our capacity to hold more classes, train more job seekers, and connect more people to good jobs. The work is a key investment in keeping our economy strong and growing. We did hear about the pay for performance direct appropriation model, and we feel it will work well with our established career pathway program because we have great outcomes and we know we can help more people get ready for work. I believe this funding model doesn't work for all programs, but it is a good fit for an established career pathway program. Further, I believe you have a one-page document with more information about Hired and our career pathway program, so I'll ask you to refer to that in the future. And meanwhile, I'm delighted to introduce you to Aisha Lee. Aisha is stepping away from work to be here today to share her experience as a program graduate of Hired's Medical Call Center program. Aisha?
Ms. Lee, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the community. Thank you for having me today. For the record, my name is Aisha Lee, and I was a participant in Hired Career Pathway Program. When the pandemic hit, I was working for a school district. I lost my job with three young children. I needed to think of how to care for them. I was referred to Hired Medical Call Center training by a job counselor. During the 6 weeks hiring training, I improved my many skills. I learned how to resource companies before interviews. I received certificates in customer service, digital literacy, and mental health first aid. Within 2 weeks of finishing the training, I had three job offerings. I decided to work for ActiveStyle. My title is intake coordinator, and my job includes listening to customers, gathering information, documentation, ensuring delivery of medical equipment, orders, and customer satisfaction. Hiring training was life-changing. I learned how to sell myself, and it gave me more confidence. The fear of job searching disappeared. I now have the opportunity to advance at ActiveStyle. Hiring Career Pathways program changed my life and my children, and I'm grateful for that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Lee. We're grateful that you can share your story with us. And I see Representative Baker. I think we have other individuals who are planning to testify. Do we have other testifiers, Ms. Berkey?
Mr. Chair, I'm afraid we do not.
All right, Representative Baker, please proceed.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't mean to interrupt there because I did want to speak at the end. I think this is a very good program, and I'm hearing the testimony from Ms. Lee, that's exactly the kind of programs and the stories we need to hear here. So I just applaud you and what you've done, and thank you very much for sharing your story. This is the kind of stuff this committee really wants to help stand up and do better. So congrats, and I really do want to support this bill. Thank you, Representative Agbaje, for bringing this forward to us. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Becca. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this isn't specific to your bill, Representative Agbaje, but just an overall comment. Certainly we have a budget surplus, but we also have a fully funded budget. And we funded a lot of these training programs through DEED last year. And I am very supportive of workforce development and training, and have some organizations too that I feel strongly about. I would prefer that this committee have a complete report back on the money that's already in the budget and the outcome that that money is making. You know, we had lots of discussion last year about the Workforce Development Fund, and frankly, if it should be redesigned, and that it wasn't a bad thing. I think, you know, DEED has been participating in that discussion as well on how do we make sure that these funds are utilized in the best fashion. We also had money through the CARES Act, the ARPA, you know, fund that went for a training. So I'd like to, you know, kind of have a step back and know where are we making a difference before we are, you know, allocating money just to various organizations again. So kind of a higher level comment there. I just wanted to be on record. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. Just to note that we never gave any direct appropriation, as I believe, to HIAD. DEED will be coming to us next week, and we may be able to get more data and information about the investment in workforce development, hopefully. Representative Vice Chair Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Representative Abadji for bringing this bill. Prior to joining the legislature, I was working at Hennepin County doing workforce, and I had the opportunity to work directly with Ms. Brecky and have hired and got to see firsthand of how the work that they do, the impacting our communities. And so it's my pleasure to support this bill, and I look forward to continuing conversation on how we can help folks like HIAD continue to do these work to impact our community. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Zhang. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question, this seems like a great organization. I mean, great outcomes, average starting wage. Where exactly is it located? Who does this organization serve? Is it a broad area? Is it statewide? How do people get in contact with you? I know word of mouth is the best, you know, vehicle out there for organizations like this, but how are you spreading the word about the services that you provide?
Ms. Bray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Frankie. HIAD is a workforce development nonprofit that's across the entire Twin Cities. We have central offices in Minneapolis, East St. Paul, Bloomington, and Brooklyn Park. We're actually also co-located with several career force centers, and we're also on site at Minneapolis College at Youth Link, which is a shelter for homeless, highly mobile youth. And we're also actually right on site at Ramsey County Juvenile Detention Center as a part of our opportunity youth work. HIAD, you're so right, Representative Frankie, word of mouth is really one of our largest and best ways of reaching into community. I will say that we've been an active career pathway program offer since 2005, so we have a strong reputation. And ultimately, we do a lot of outreach in communities with boots on the ground, frankly, reaching into communities that may not know about our programs. Furthermore, we're really actively using social media where we can. And are getting out to farmers markets, to libraries, to a whole cross section of places to make sure that the word gets out about these job training programs in high growth sectors where employers are struggling to find qualified workers. And I will address Ms. Haley's question as well. HIAD, again, as I said, has been a grant recipient of DEED, and we have outstanding results. What this additional funding will help us do is expand and add additional channels. We have no more ways to compete at DEED. So if we can do more to really close the gap in workforce shortage, in fact, also close the gap in racial disparities in employment in the state, Hired is well poised to do that, even more so than we are today with these additional funds. So thank you very much.
Professor Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, great answer. Thank you.
Chair Daphne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Couple of thoughts. I recognize that right now we've got a 3.9% unemployment rate, which in my Econ 101 class, I was told was impossible, that we simply couldn't have that low an unemployment rate. And I also hear employers crying out for more workers. I want to thank Representative Igbaje for being so strategic and thoughtful in approaching that challenge, because really a big part of the answer to the employer's need for workers is to pull people who are currently at the margins into the workforce. So I hear Hired talking about working with youth in homeless shelters and juvenile justice. Those are kids who probably aren't going to show up in the regular process to getting into the employment situation. Targeting folks who are traditionally on the margins, homeless folks, folks with disabilities, folks who've been in contact with the legal system in one way or another, has to be a key strategy for Minnesota to meet the workforce needs and help our employers support Minnesotans. So I think this is a smart approach. And just as an aside, I hear the GOP voices telling us that the state budget was set last year and we're good, but those are the same voices who came in asking for $2.7 billion in state money. So I'm struck by the inconsistency where $2.7 billion isn't an issue, but Representative Bajay's bill suddenly means that we have to close the door because we set the state budget last year. We either set it last year or we've got a surplus that we should use to invest in Minnesotans and Minnesota's future. It's one or the other. It's not both in conflict with each other. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Daphne. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, is it Brecky?
Yes.
Yep, okay, thank you. I just want to make sure I was pronouncing it right. I don't know how long you've been at Hired, but I want to let you know that Hired made an impact in my life. I was part of, I got laid off during the Great Recession and utilized the Hired branch up in Brooklyn Park. And my employment coach there was amazing, and I kept in touch with her. Actually, until I learned that she passed away a couple of years ago. And so, there's very few people that impact your life and help you get on a path. And I honestly don't think I would be in the legislature right now without Cindy Escondary. Just wanted to thank you, and, I'm going to support this bill for her. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Representative Cagle, for that. And don't see any other discussion from members. Representative Igbaje, do you have any closing remarks?
Sure. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Brecky, for being here and talking about the great work that Hired does. I think, a lot of people have stressed it, having a job makes a real important difference and a material difference in your life. And so I am hoping that as we continue to have conversations about the budget and the surplus and what we can be doing with it, I do hope we take into consideration investment for people, especially those who are most vulnerable in our society, and making sure that we're bringing them into the fold. So I hope that this bill will be part of serious consideration moving forward. So thank you so much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Igbaje, for bringing this bill forward, and to the testifiers. I appreciate you giving your testimony and also the conversation we're having. With that, I renew my motion. House File 3848 be laid over for possible inclusion. And we now go to Representative Baker's bill, House File 3550. Please move your bill and present it to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I do have an amendment I'd like to bring forward as well. And I think along with that, this might be a question yet that can't be answered right this moment, but I think we're scheduled to go possibly to the Environmental Committee, which kind of houses the funding for Explore Minnesota. The amendment changes that a bit, and maybe I can ask our leaders if this might still go there or if it maybe should go to maybe higher education, because we are kind of switching the funding to a direct thing to the University of Minnesota. So we can come back to that if you want, Mr. Chair, but I want to make sure at least my amendment gets voted on as I'd like to present the bill.
Ms. Charlene or anyone? Or Ms. Eng?
I'm sorry, what amendment?
I don't see the amendment attached, but...
If it's not an amendment, I think it was a change, and I'm not sure, maybe it didn't make the deadline. So we can just let it go forward if you want to at this point, Mr. Chair, and let it go to the process that you have lined up, but we did want to make some changes to that.
Please proceed. I know the motion is to refer to Environment, Natural Resources, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Okay, we'll take it with that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. So, members, you know that I'm deep into the hospitality world. I think we all know that the COVID conversations have always elevated hospitality restaurants to the highest impacted industry out there. I'm excited to say that we've been working on this program from an idea brought to us from Mr. Jason Stewart, who saw this working at a neighboring state. We've got Jason here today, along with Hospitality Minnesota, and we think this co-branding idea to allow free online training for folks in the hospitality industry to kind of hone their skills, be a really nice online certification kind of a system is a really good idea for a low, very low price. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll turn it over to Mr. Wogsland from the Hospitality Minnesota to explain the bill.
Mr. Wogsland, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members and committee staff. My name is Ben Wogsland. I'm the Executive Vice President with Hospitality Minnesota, representing Minnesota's restaurants, food service, hotels and lodging, and resort and campground industries. I want to say, first of all, thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill today. I want to thank our bipartisan authorship led by Representative Baker on this bill. The bill, as it sits before you, House File 3550, would create a statewide free online hospitality training program modeled after the highly successful South Dakota program. It would fund $250,000 to create this educational program in consultation with Explore Minnesota Tourism. As I said before, this is a bipartisan bill, and I'd like to note that we have strong coalition support from quite a few folks out there, including the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, Minnesota Association of Convention and Visitors Bureaus, Minnesota Tourism Growth Coalition, Visit St. Paul, Meet Minneapolis, Minneapolis Regional Chamber, Minneapolis Downtown Council, Brainerd Lakes Chamber, Rochester Area Chamber, Duluth Area Chamber, the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild, and the Greater Minneapolis Hotel Association. As was mentioned earlier, hospitality has been the hardest hit industry when it comes to workforce shortage. We remain down over 20,000 jobs from pre-pandemic levels. We also project that as many as 50,000 workers permanently left the industry during the pandemic, and we're now in the process of rebuilding the workforce pipeline. Many of those new hires over the past 6 months are brand new to the hospitality industry and first-time workers. So we think that speaks to the need for a program like this that can help train people very effectively and also give them some of the skills to ladder up quickly. We do think there's a significant need for those training resources and certification programs like this that have worked so well in South Dakota to help workers ladder up in their career in an industry that has one of the fastest paths to management and entrepreneurship in the country. 9 out of 10 restaurant managers and 8 out of 10 owners began at the entry level. According to federal data, workers who get their start in this industry, which is 1 in 3 Americans, earn more over the course of their career than in other industries. And while this workforce shortage is a problem and a challenge for our industry and for the state economically, it provides an incredible opportunity for young people that are passionate about this industry, just starting out now, because there are historic opportunities to advance and advance quickly. We've been working on this for over 9 months in consultation with officials in South Dakota, learning more about their program and how we might model after it. Their highly successful program was created by a partnership with higher education there and Visit South Dakota, or their version of Explore Minnesota Tourism. And that's what our model here contemplates as well. We are looking forward to working with the U of M Tourism Center as a primary creator of content that would work in collaboration with Explore Minnesota Tourism and folks in industry like ourselves, as well as other educators. I've heard directly from educators at Normandale, at St. Paul College, and other folks that would like to help in advancing this. It's really needed right now. We think it works really well in addition to the ProStart and hospitality tourism and management programs that are growing in the high schools. And so we just see a lot of merit in this program as a real tool to train thousands of new workers per year, and some existing workers as well, in a section that's really needed to help in our economic recovery. So in the interest of time, I'll stop there, but I'm happy to stand for any questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much, and to the committee and the staff for your work on this.
Thank you, Mr. Wogsland, for your testimony. The next person on the list is Ms. Sheehan. I'm not sure if I pronounced correctly. Please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the members of the committee. My name is Xinyi Qian. I'm the director of the University of Minnesota Tourism Center. The Tourism Center is highly interested in this work because it aligns very well with our mission of empowering, preparing, and supporting the tourism industry and the communities engaging in tourism for success and sustainability. We have a long history of doing educational and training programs, and then also extensive experience of delivering programs in online asynchronous format. We are the only tourism center in Minnesota, and also one of a small number of tourism research and education centers in the entire country. Well positioned with the University of Minnesota Extension, we have been serving the entire state for 35 years, leveraging expertise and resources across the university system. In the past several months, we have been in conversations with Hospitality Minnesota and Explore Minnesota Tourism to look at how to create and deliver an online customer service training program that would be free of charge to business owners and workers. We stand ready to mobilize a team of colleagues to develop the curriculum, to create an online delivery mechanism, and work with a variety of partners to promote the program, especially to those most in need. And we are also excited about opportunities to partner with our colleagues from the Minnesota State Colleges and University system. We welcome their contributions, and of course, we value their insights. In the past year, we at the Tourism Center have heard repeatedly from our advisory committee members, partners, businesses, and communities about the dire workforce situation in our industry. As Ben already pointed out, our industry was the hardest hit by the pandemic in our state and also in this country. As our industry recovers, many new workers that businesses managed to hire are either first-time workers or they are brand new to our industry. And so it is critical to business survival to make sure that these new workers are properly trained on customer service skills. Without these properly trained workers, resorts in Greater Minnesota, restaurants on main streets, entrepreneurs in opportunity zones and the neighborhoods big and small, will all be severely stressed by workforce issues. As tourism and hospitality businesses suffer, it will have ripple effects across the broader economy. For example, if a restaurant reduces operating hours due to a shortage of workers, it wouldn't need nearly as many supplies and ingredients from the local farms, which would have negative economic implications to the farms. So it is really critically important to make sure that our state offers an online program that trains tourism and hospitality workers on customer service skills, that the program is convenient for workers to complete, and that the program has no cost barrier to either businesses or workers. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ms. Shen, for your testimony. We have one more person, Mr. Sabat. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee, for allowing me to add a few comments on to this very important topic. My name is Jason Subert. I am the general manager for Four Hotels in Fairmont, Minnesota for TPI Hospitality. TPI Hospitality is the largest owner and operator of hotels in the state of Minnesota. You know, prior to COVID, we had over 2,000 employees in the state of Minnesota working in hospitality. We have 9 restaurants and 35 hotels. But in my career, I've always lived in Minnesota, but I've operated from a district standpoint, 56 hotels in 9 states. And so I've seen firsthand when I worked in South Dakota, I've seen this program and the impact it can make, really, because it's, you know, tourism in South Dakota is different than tourism in Texas. And South Dakota's program does such a great job of helping people be a great ambassador, not only for people that travel to your city, but they're throughout your state. They help educate you about your state and how people will travel. And it's not just learning how the elementary things of how to, you know, work with a work schedule and so on and so forth. But this opportunity has so many things going for it. And the first thing I want to point out is 1 in 3 Minnesotans' first jobs are in hospitality. So 1 in 3 people in Minnesota, their first ever job was in hospitality. And our industry, first of all, teaches people how to work. And whether we pick McDonald's or Culver's, or it doesn't matter which organization, they help teach kids how to work. Now, a lot of these kids will move on to do the work that you guys are doing every day. But your first job may have been at a Dairy Queen. It may have been at a hotel working in housekeeping. And what happens is when kids go to college, they need jobs. And our industry has a way of helping them continue to learn. But right now, we've had this gap between when COVID happened, you know, our industry was really shut down. And what happens during that time period is a lot of your tenured people are the people that we really had hours for, that we gave the hours to. And so a lot of people that are on the fringes that are new to our industry or were younger at that point or didn't have a family, they didn't receive as many hours as maybe some of the tenured people. So just like in the Explore Minnesota Tourism, they just posted their 2021 annual report. They kind of shared that 16% of our labor force has disappeared since January of 2020. A lot of those jobs are high school and college kids. Now, when kids weren't in college, they weren't in, let's use St. Cloud as an example. There's 19,000 students at St. Cloud State. Well, when they weren't in session and they were doing online schooling from home, none of those kids were in St. Cloud. And so, you know, our industry needs those kids. We need those kids working. And it's just, we're going back to that. We're getting closer to having really good travel numbers. If you look at the annual report through EMT, they're really excited about their anticipated travel for this 2022 summer season. And we need that workforce coming back, and those high school and college students, and then those part-time jobs, you know, that that bartender that works once a week. Well, that doesn't really exist in our industry right now. Those people aren't doing that, even though they might have done that when they were in college and it's a great second job. We need those jobs back as well. But this program is really a great thing, because just like Mrs. Lee with that career pathway, I would be curious if one of her jobs as she started to learn how to work was in hospitality at one time. Because one of the things that we found is our industry is one of the most diverse industries in the world. You know, we have people, we actually employ probably more women than we do men. And, you know, we have to work together to find ways to onboard a lot more people. You talk 16% of the second largest employment industry in the state. That's a tremendous amount of positions that need to be backfilled. And I think some of the areas that are going to be hit the worst is some of the small towns and rural communities and more inner city, employers. These are the places that that the fallout of the lack of employees are hurting those areas probably more so than any other spot in the state. So thanks for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Subert, and I appreciate you giving us all the information. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Baker, for the great bill. I have a question. I'm wondering, do you think with what this industry's seeing right now that you're asking for enough of an appropriation, and what your thought process is about that? Because, you know, we're used to dealing with such large numbers in this committee sometimes. For the scope of the problem, which was just explained by the previous testifier, do we feel that this is enough and we can achieve the goals that we want to achieve with this appropriation, Representative Baker?
Representative Baker.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, great question, Representative Frankie. In fact, that came up in our discussions with our friends at Explore Minnesota Tourism, the University of Minnesota, and also along with DEED. That was the first question I asked, is this going to be enough? In fact, one of the changes we want to make to this actually is to put in an additional $25,000 a year, a quarter FTE to the University of Minnesota to make sure that we maintain an ongoing online presence that's up to speed, up to date all the time. So it's going to be slightly adjusted to this, but we actually think, yes, we can build a system and a program very similar to what we see with South Dakota. And I think a lot of these components are already in place. We've looked at that number, and we think this is a one-time, very efficient way to roll out an online program. So good question, and thank you. We think we have this one.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment. You know, programs like this, it's very inspiring to see the thought process behind it, because as the testifier, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, Mr. Subert, said, you know, as a young person, you know, I've been in this industry my whole life, and we progress. And I remember one of my first jobs at Burger King, and getting that little certificate when I attended a little training seminar. It's a resume builder, and it gives you pride in what you're doing. When I became a certified food handler, it was like, oh, now I'm a certified food handler. It helps give you a stepping stone to progress to whatever you're going to be when you grow up. I'm still trying to figure that out, Mr. Chair and Representative Baker, but it, for our young people, to give them that inspiration to achieve, it's just a little something that we can help create and to help this industry. So thank you, Representative Baker. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to speak briefly in support of this. Worked with Mr. Wogsland during the shutdowns and trying to support our hospitality industry and our restaurants. I think this is a very well thought out proposal, and that Representative Baker's an outstanding job of really working with all these parties, whether it's the University of Minnesota, DEED, or the Department of Tourism. This is a creative approach with a very small amount of money that can impact a lot of people and help folks get on a fast track, as Mr. Wogsland said, to entrepreneurship and higher paying jobs. So very supportive of the proposal today, and especially just, again, the creativity, looking at a model that's already working somewhere else, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel, but we can quickly scale up something and help a lot of Minnesotans. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Haley. Chair Dudley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me take my hand down so it's not irritating. Question for the author, if I may. Representative yes. Baker, was the state budget fully settled last year in the special session or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I believe the budget was settled. We all agreed on it. It took a special session, but we got there. And this is a new idea and a new bill. Yes.
Chair Dabney.
Well, but Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Baker, we're being told that, you know, Representative Agbaje's bill shouldn't have been considered because the state budget was settled last year. Should we be considering new initiatives this year, or should we consider the state budget to have been settled last year?
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, I think, well, with the allowing new ideas and new bills every 2 years, I think both of it works both ways. I think some of the things that we're trying to fill in with unemployment compensation, getting us back to pre-pandemic things, is kind of where some folks want to know, where do we start from? But as we have found, we are overtaxing Minnesotans. And if there are good worker force programs that we can stand up while we are in session, I say that while we're in session, all ideas are good ideas until the teams here decide it's not a good idea. So I support always looking at new ideas, and bringing ideas to the table isn't a bad idea.
So Mr. Chair, thank you. What I'm hearing from Representative Baker is the budget was settled, but we should reopen it to good ideas. And I agree with him. I think we can look at new ideas. I think we should look at new ideas. I think we should remain in touch with businesses and in touch with working families and what their needs are and how we can better invest in Minnesotans. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Baker, for clarifying that good ideas are always welcome and that the door isn't closed to any good idea. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Dovny. Representative Baker, did you have a quick closing, and then we'll make an amendment to the motion?
Yeah, real quick closing, Mr. Chair. And again, if we want to lay this bill over to kind of get it right so it goes to the right committee afterwards, I'm happy to do that. Again, thank you for your time, everybody. I think co-branding a workforce bill like this alongside Explore Minnesota, the University of Minnesota, I really do see this as being a strong thing that we're going to see in the next few years. Really would appreciate your support, and thank you again for the time today, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Baker. And just a suggestion that we look into virtual reality, because we're talking about young people and the new technology that we have, that people can be doing a virtual reality so that they can really feel what they're learning. And maybe that's a suggestion. With that, Representative Baker would like to lay over the House File 3550. That's the motion, the amendment that we have, and we will get back to this bill once we have cleared some of the changes. We don't have any other agenda item before us, and unless someone has a quick question, we are adjourned for the day.